Good morning, everybody, and happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there. Whether you're here with us or watching at home, we want to honor fathers a little bit. I want to talk a little bit about God's commandment to honor thy father, that it may go well with you and that you may live long in the land. Ephesians 6:3, that's actually, though, essentially a quote from the law of Moses. But I want to introduce a little bit with talking about the importance of how we are raising our boys. And a couple of books I might recommend to you about what our boys are facing, especially in school, and especially from school all the way through college. There's two books I would recommend. One called The Boys Crisis by Warren Farrell. And the second is Christina Hoff Summers writes The War on Boys. And in the last 20 years or so, actually the problem boys are having in school was recognized back in the 90s in a big study, a nationwide study, how boys were falling behind in a whole bunch of subjects. And yet the only real focus in the 90s was the couple of subjects that girls weren't doing as well. And so the push was to increase the help for girls. But our boys have been suffering. In fact, I'm disappointed at our political leaders. When all the shootings happen, mass shootings, they're looking for kind of simplistic answers. And I almost never hear, what are we doing to our boys that are causing our boys to shoot up schools? And one of the prominent factors, especially of, I believe, all the mass shootings in schools since 2000, if I remember accurately, Warren Farrell talked about this recently, every single one of them grew up in a household without a father. And fathers have a big impact on the family. But for a fairly long time, going way back to the 60s, fathers' importance was minimized and thought to be unimportant. In fact, I took a class in 1985, I think it was 85, took a class on the feminist perspective. So out of 50 students, I was one of three men in there. Obviously feeling professor was a woman, feminist, teaching about feminism and learning all about this movement that had really begun in earnest in the 60s. But she said one thing that always stuck with me. Not only did I get to read that book, The Feminist Perspective, by Betty Friedan, not that I would recommend it, but I got to read it. She said something that they had learned. Because she said a lot of feminists and from the 60s on had thought a lot of the problem with boys was their fathers. And that if you took away the father's bad influence of making them so, macho, if you take away all of that, that they would be able to raise much more compassionate, kind, loving men. And they learned that their boys drove them crazy. And they didn't understand them. They couldn't understand not only were their boys not these wonderful, loving, compassionate men they were hoping to raise, they in many ways were the opposite. And a lot of the feminist women realized we've raised a whole bunch of boys who don't respect women. And in fact, boys who typically learn to respect women learn that from their fathers. And how their fathers teach them is incredibly important. And I'm going to focus on boys and fathers today, but understand it hurts girls too when they grow up and fought without fathers. And almost 40% of our country now is growing up without fathers in the household. And in some communities, it's much, much bigger than 50%. And so the effects of no fathers is being felt throughout our society, especially in the adolescent and young male community. And because males from about the age of 15 through 25 or so commit most of the violence in almost every culture. And every culture has to figure out how to direct boys and their energy and their aggression in a positive way. And if you don't do that, you suffer the consequences of their kind of unchecked and undirected violence. Because our girls are growing up in the same kind of issues and same societies, but they don't turn as violent. And boys without direction, boys without purpose, become violent. And fathers are a big part of that. And it isn't just a boy problem. Because, as I was saying, if boys don't feel like they have any purpose, they don't have any value, and a lot of our boys growing up in school are being told on a fairly regular basis that they bear all the sins of all the patriarchy that has gone before them, and that they are the problem with the world. And the boys have been hearing this for a fairly long time. It's not helping them, it is hurting them. And when they get hurt, our society is going to feel the effects of it. And I think we are. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I'll leave that alone. But I want to talk about, honoring our fathers. But I want to really focus specifically on our Father in heaven. Because this concept of a father is taught to us by God. It isn't something we came up with. And God uses the term father about himself so that he is our father. He is the one that we need to have men learn that's what we need to learn to be. And in fact, one of the things Warren Farrell talks about in his book, The Boys' Crisis, is that he talks about in generations past, boys were specifically taught what he called the heroic intelligence. That they're taught they need to sacrifice themselves for others. That's what they learned even as teenagers, to go to war. I know my father, in World War II, volunteered when he was 17, near the end of World War II. And, a lot of boys did. And they were taught that it was necessary, and they had that was their role in many ways. To help keep others safe from tyranny and from those who would harm us. And so, but all of that idea of sacrificing self is what we see specifically mentioned in Ephesians. And we're going to look at that passage in a little bit, but that the goal for all of men is to be like Christ, to sacrifice ourselves for others, not to be served, but to serve. Now, we're all told that is essentially our standard as Christians, to not be served, to serve others. But in Psalm 68, Psalm is kind of talking about God, and it says, sing to God, sing praises to his name, lift up a song to him who rides through the deserts. His name is the Lord. Exult before him. Father of the fatherless and protector of widows is God in his holy habitation. This is where we get this idea that men need to see themselves as protectors. And I know it's common for women to say, I don't need saving. Well, often you do for men. And who are the people you need when you need saving for men? Who are the people you often want around? Other men. And it isn't because you're not as bright isn't because you're not as talented, isn't because you're not as skillful or wise. It's because you're smaller. And so you take a man and woman with equal training in fighting, and the size difference puts women at a tremendous disadvantage. And so, and then when you take the aggressive nature of men, especially, in teenage years with testosterone kind of coursing through their veins, unable to really kind of harness that hormone. And women understand what hormones do to you as well. And men have, and boys have the exact same problem with hormones. It's just a different hormone, and it's a different thing happening. And so God is the one that we ought to look to. He is our protector. That's what he did for Israel, and that's what he calls on men to be. Now, the father of all, God is the one, and when we talk about honoring our father, I never like to think about Father's Day without honoring God our Father. It talks about in Hebrews 12:9, besides this, we have earthly fathers who disciplined us and we respected them. Usually, right? Shall we not much more be subject to the Father of spirits and live? Because God is the Father of all of us. He's not just the Father of some. And our fathers in this world, we owe them respect. That's what God tells us. We don't owe them respect because they were the definition of good. In fact, our fathers were, you know, probably all of us have different experiences with our fathers, and some of them better than others, but they were all imperfect. Even if they tried to do the right thing all the time, it didn't mean they succeeded. But we still need to give them respect and honor. And that's what God is telling us to do. But if we're going to give our fathers respect, the reason we respect them is really because we respect our Father in heaven. And Ephesians 4:6 also talks about the one God and Father of all, who is over all and through all and in all. So in Ephesians 4 and verse 6, this idea that God, he is the one who is all of our Father. And so on this day, we honor our fathers in the flesh in this country. Hopefully, we don't forget that to honor our Father in heaven. Now, what does our Father in heaven say he would like us to do? To obey and respect our human fathers. Ephesians chapter 6, verses 1 through 3. Children, obey your parents and Lord, for this is right. Just kind of start with that first part of it. He said, now we understand, I think most of us, that when God tells us to follow, to obey, whether it's our leaders in a country, whether it is our fathers, parents, or whether it's, you know, our masters or our bosses, that is limited when they urge us to do something that's wrong. Then we should say no to that. But up till that point where they urge us to do something that is sinful, then we ought to obey. We ought to follow and do what we are told because God said it's right. Now, does that mean our parents are always right? That is not what he said. It's right to be obedient. In fact, I've suggested that unless we learn obedience, we actually don't quite know when to rebel, the appropriate time to rebel. If we haven't learned obedience, and like, I know, I'm going to obey, I'm going to do what I'm told. But then at some point, you might be told to do something that you should say no to. But if your standard of saying no to things is you'll say no to everything, well, then you don't really know when the right time to say no is. But he goes on and he says, honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise that it may go well with you and that you may live long in the land. Now, this is not the first commandment God gave, but it's the first commandment he gave in the law of Moses that he promised something in addition to it. He said, I don't want you just to honor your mother and father. He said, it also blesses you. Now, is that an absolute? No, we understand. I mean, people pass away sometimes earlier than we would like. But in general, when we honor our parents, that is better for us and really for our culture. And when you look at nations and cultures that honor their elders, honor their parents, you see a much more, you see a lot less, what's the right word for it? A lot less rebellion, a lot less strife. In cultures that honor those who've gone before them, that their peace and tranquility is a product of that. And so that's one of the things God is telling us to do. And he's telling us to do it not because they're so wonderful, but because God is telling us it's the right thing to do. And he wants us to do it to honor him. Now, in Ephesians 6:4, the next verse after this, "Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord." I always think of this kind of, it's the next verse right after telling children, right? Telling fathers. But I think one of the things it reminds us is that fathers, we need to remember that our children are his children also. They're not just ours. God understands them as his kids too. And so he urges us to treat them appropriately. And he says to not provoke them. And think about, why are fathers specifically addressed as the one not to provoke their children to wrath and anger? Is that saying that women never do that? No, I don't think he's saying women, but who probably does it more than men? Now, this doesn't mean all of your discipline and instruction, they're not going to, he's not saying they're always going to love it. But you have to not poke them. He's kind of saying, because the idea of provoking is to really to poke somebody. You know you're going to get a response, right? You know, in my house, for example. So my family, ever since I was kind of little, I've mentioned in the past that I have my skin and things are really sensitive. I probably shouldn't really tell you this. I'm incredibly ticklish. I can kind of hide it for a while, but people who know me know. And so, you know, I mean, I was tickled a lot as a kid. I mean, I really can't control it. There's almost any part of my body is ticklish. It's all sensitive. I don't know why my body is very sensitive that way, but it is. And so, you know, Julie used to be pretty good at it, poking me. She'd come by, she'd poke me. And typically I'd kind of run away. And Janae can remember. In our house, when somebody was chasing somebody, it was always Julie chasing me. Because she was always trying to tickle me or she was provoking me. It was primarily in fun. But you know, I'm running around. She's laughing at it. You know, and Julie's chasing me all over. Because I would try oftentimes when she would poke me to have no reaction. Well, that wasn't acceptable. So Julie was going to poke me until I reacted. I could not do the same to her because she wasn't ticklish. And so I could poke her and she'd be like, whatever. So, but that's kind of a funny example of it. And you can actually occasionally see children who are really ticklish, where their siblings or even parents will tickle them to the point that it actually is pretty torturous. If people who are really ticklish and are being tickled a lot, they're laughing and you think they're having fun, but actually it gets to the point where they're not. And so, like for me, I mean, and having a lot of older siblings, I certainly got my share of that. And when they were done, I was angry. I really wanted to strike them. Now, they were quite a bit older than me, so I never, if I had, they wouldn't have affected them. But, and so I just kind of use that as an example of what it means to provoke, to just poke at people specifically because you're trying to get a reaction from them. And he's warning us to not do that to our children. Now, he's not telling us not to discipline them and not to instruct them and not to correct them. But that's not the same thing as provoking them. And so our goal with our children in fathers specifically, and fathers are held responsible for this more so than mothers by God. The instruction and training and discipline is whom God directly points at. You fathers, I'm holding you responsible. Now, that doesn't mean mothers don't have a role in all that. But God really points at fathers in this respect. And he says, and then warns them, you don't be provocative and causing essentially an anger response from them just because you're poking at them. Now, what does it mean to really honor? So there's three things here I want to kind of focus on. The first one is the idea of respect. Leviticus 19, verse 3 says, every one of you shall revere his mother and father, and you shall keep my Sabbaths. I am the Lord your God. And he's saying, and this idea of revere means to respect them. Now, I'm sure most of us have had fathers, or some of us have had fathers that were not necessarily respectable. They weren't always worthy of respect. Now, if you had one of those fathers who's worthy of respect, that's a blessing for you in your life. But he urges us to respect them even when they're not respectable. It's a little bit like he tells us, you know, like in the law of Moses, they were not to curse their king. Now, does that mean all the kings were good? No. In fact, in Israel's history, there were very few of them who were righteous. A few of them were pretty good. And the vast majority of them were horrible. And yet they were told, still, you do not curse them. You do not speak evil of them. You show some respect for their, if it isn't just them specifically, it's their position. And really, that idea should carry through to us, to even our leaders, whether that's in our state governments, you know, local governments, you know, national governments. They may not be respectable or worthy of respect because of their own behavior, but we ought to treat them with respect because of the position they're in. And we ought to not curse them. We ought to respect our parents and our fathers, even when they're not always respectable. Because they're not ever going to be perfect. There's not a father alive who wouldn't look back at their parenting and go, man, there are so many times that I just blew it. I just didn't do the right thing. Even if I was wanting to. Secondly is to listen. So I actually kind of took off the second part of that. The second part of that talks about mothers of this Proverbs chapter 1 and verse 8. But hear, my son, your father's instruction. This is actually the really hardest one for kids, isn't it? I see some children kind of, I don't like listening. You know, we say oftentimes that, you know, after about a minute, you've lost children. Children have a tendency to zone you out, right? They block you out in one ear, out the other. They're not really listening. And they're not really listening because they don't really want to. They want to do what they want to do because that is the nature of children. Most children are not of the sort. They go, what would you like me to do, Father? That's what I'll do. That's not most children. Now, that's not... maybe a few rare kids out there like that, but that's not most of them. Most of them are like, I want to do what I want to do until you kind of prevent me. And so you're just really a hindrance to me doing what I want. And so they only listen, and they only typically listen when they want to listen, which isn't often and it isn't a lot. But you have to, he's urging all of the kids to really honor your father and your mother is to actually really listen. Now, fathers and mothers really should understand that your words do have an effect. Even though they let a lot of them go, they do hear them. They do understand them usually. And often, they come back to them, especially when they become adults, and if they get to the point that they are parents, that those things that you told them kind of flood right on back. You know, and most parents will tell you that, that they hear them their parents talking when they first start talking as a parent. Like, wow, where'd that? That's what my dad used to say. That's what my mom used to say. And I didn't even, you might not have even thought about it in years. But he's urging us. And so as fathers, our instructions need to be thoughtful, not provoking, and always with the intent of trying to help them understand the Lord's way. And the last part of this, seek wisdom. If you really want to honor your parents, you should seek after wise. He says, a wise son makes a glad father. It would be nice if our behavior as children didn't affect our parents. Because as children, a lot of times, especially, you know, teenagers and stuff, it's like, well, I'm not hurting you. I'm not doing anything to you. Yeah, you are. Your behavior affects your parents and your grandparents. It affects them for good and it affects them for bad. It can make them proud and feel glad, and it can make them sorrowful. And it'd be, you know, a lot of people would like it that, you know, what I do doesn't affect you. It's like, don't worry about me. But the reality is what we do affects most of the people around us. It doesn't just affect our parents. It affects our neighbors. It affects our coworkers. It affects our brethren. It affects our family and in the house. We are not islands to ourselves. What we do and how we live and what we seek after affects others. And if we want to be honorable and to honor others, we should seek after that which is wise and that which is good, that which is helpful and a blessing to others. Well, we're going to kind of wind up, kind of leave it there for today. I do want to talk just a little bit, too, about, kind of, since I have a few extra minutes here, just what our boys are going through in school, especially since, and this started happening in the late 90s, early 2000s. One of the things they really started to notice is that now about 60% of college participants are women. And only about 40 or 50 years ago, it was exactly reversed. 60% were men and 40% were women. And now it's completely reversed. One of the problems of that is women who are highly educated and make money don't want to marry men who typically make less money and who aren't as educated. But we have a whole generation of men that have less of it than they do. Because the reverse doesn't happen. Men don't have that standard. They don't really, it doesn't bother them. Women don't make as much money. It doesn't bother them if they don't have as much education. So that you have a conflict happening in relationships. And we have a whole bunch of males in our society that are basically not dating, that are not making much money. And now it's also in the last 40 or 50 years, it's completely reversed who moves back in with their parents. 40 and 50 years ago, it was primarily girls who moved back in with parents if necessary. And now it's completely flipped and it's mostly boys. Something has happened in the last 40 and 50 years that is shifting our society in a way that is making it quite unhealthy for our young people. And in school specifically, boys are struggling. What's really fascinating in both of the books I suggested to you bring up this subject, that that boys testing in all of these subject matters, in a number of areas, they test higher than girls and get worse grades. And it starts at kindergarten. And so, for some reason, the only area that girls early on do better than boys at in terms of testing is actually in reading and literacy, reading and writing. But even there, boys test closer to the girls than their grades are. And so there is something happening in our school systems that is hurting boys They talk about some of their ideas of what's going on. But I think all of us, especially those with boys, those who are raising boys, grandparents, you know, have grandsons, really ought to consider how can we help them? How can we help give them purpose and direction? And I know for me, I can think back to myself. When I was, you know, I wasn't raised going to church. I'm not at all motivated by money. So even when I graduated college, I don't really care about having a job and made money. It didn't matter to me. I'm just not motivated that way. I don't really know why, but it's not something that interests me terribly. I know it's necessary. It's just not a motivation for me. And so I kind of finished up college. I worked full time pretty much through college, graduated, but I was pretty lost. And especially when my plans to join the Air Force, I couldn't go in as I wanted because of my sight. I really was kind of like no direction, no real purpose. I mean, I worked hard, but it wasn't until I really was introduced to God by a friend who brought me to church that I really began to find purpose, began to find a direction, and my life changed for the better. And so all of us, whether our girls or our boys, our purpose needs to really start with God. And that's why fathers were urged to train and discipline our children in the Lord, because that's where our purpose stems from and where it derives from, and that hopefully we submit our purpose to God's glory. So we're going to stop there. I appreciate your thoughts or just attention this morning. I hope these thoughts have helped you. I hope it's honoring to those fathers out there. And I hope for many of us who kind of remember our own fathers or honor them if you can, if they're still here. A day to honor our fathers and especially our Father in heaven. So we're going to sing 535 to close out this morning. And if you're here today, though, and you need help in some way, if we can serve you, if you want to study, if you need help in any kind of physical way, or if you realize that your life, you haven't been seeking God and you want to, and you want to come to Him, you know, we have baptistry always ready to baptize people into Christ, to raise them up in new life. And if you're here today and you seek that, we'd be glad to help you in that path and in that search. And if you're here today in anything, please reach out to us. Let's go ahead and stand and sing.